You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. What have you got for us, Connor?
Hey, so as you may, you know, we've been covering a lot on Brexit over the last...
as you may have heard,
as you may have heard for a while. And to be honest, I mean, I don't know about you listeners, but it's depressing me and I'm getting sick to the back teeth. And I thought, you know what, let's look at something a bit more positive than that. So I decided to look at the five countries on the other side of Europe, in Eastern Europe, who are trying to get into the EU and have been trying to do it for a long time and see where they stand. So these countries are, and I'm going to kind of do them quick fire, which is Albania, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Macedonia, Serbia, Kosovo, and Montenegro. Six. Countries. So what I'm going to do, I'm not going to talk about Turkey, because Turkey getting into the EU is a whole other ball game and we don't have time. I'm only going to be able to touch on so much. And I guess kind of what I want to do with this is look at these countries and kind of break down a lot of unknowns, because unless you're part of the Croatian diaspora here, and bear with me, people of Croatian descent who know a lot about that, but like that part of the world. But a lot of people here,
or I think, Serbian too,
or Serbian as well. Yes, I think a lot of people kind of draw a blank on that part of the world, and there's still a kind of mental iron curtain there where everyone just kind of, there's stereotypes that it's, you know, just still kind of a fairly depressing ex-concrete block, a communist concrete block, and it's not true, and there's a lot of culture there, and these people are trying to show that off. And so yeah, we're going to look at what these countries have to do, go a bit into the history of it, and we're just going to kind of quick fire touch on them. And
cool.
So what we're going to start off with is we're going to look back 5 years ago to 2013, when Croatia made it into the European Union.
The celebrations went on into the night. People prepared to forget their economic difficulties for the moment and enjoy becoming part of the European club. It's been a tough process for Croatia. EU membership has demanded reform on human rights and stamping out corruption. There's still some way to go, but for now the speeches were of triumph and congratulations.
Whatever anyone is saying about us, you should know we are a country of rational people who are realistic about themselves and their country and the role of their country in Europe and the world. Croatia knows it is not going away tonight from where it is. We are staying where we are, but with the new responsibility, the responsibility to help the countries in the region to achieve the criteria for the EU as soon as possible.
Dear friends, welcome to the European Union. Dobro došli u Europsku uniju. Thank you.
5 years ago, Croatia became the 28th member of the European Union and the second former Yugoslav republic to do so. Considering that only 20 years prior, the country was witnessing genocide, ethnic cleansing and major territorial changes, it has made leaps and bounds to not only enter the EU, but also to enjoy the spoils of EU trade, which have culminated in the Mediterranean nation becoming one of the Europe's top tourist destinations. What's more, the process of joining the Schengen Agreement and removing border controls will allow complete free-flowing trade with historic partners Italy, Austria and Germany. This was pivotal in reigniting historic economic and cultural ties that were somewhat severed when the Yugoslav nations went behind the Iron Curtain. But in that clip, you heard former Croatian Prime Minister Zoran Milanovic make a promise to help its neighbours achieve a similar status. So has that been kept? Here's current Croatian Prime Minister Andrej Plenković speaking to the European Parliament in Brussels.
I see the role of my country as a bridge, as a facilitator, as someone who will advocate further enlargement. Because the future of our neighbours anchored in the EU is positive for Croatia. It will help us to address all the residual and open issues which stem from the times when Croatia was a victim of aggression. That's why we will do our utmost to help all of our neighbours, especially Bosnia and Herzegovina. I think here we have all of us historical responsibility, paying attention to the full equality of all the three constituent peoples and all the others in the country.
Currently, the prospective EU members are Serbia, Montenegro, Macedonia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Albania and Kosovo. So let's go through them, starting with those who seem to have the easiest entry. Let's start with Macedonia and their recent referendum.
Despite only 36% turnout, Prime Minister Zoran Zaev declared the vote a success.
In the referendum today, more than 650,000 citizens voted, and more than 90% of them accepted the deal with Greece and decided that this country should be in the European Union and NATO.
He has pledged to see it through. The non-binding referendum asked Macedonian voters to weigh in on a June deal with Greece. The country proposed changing its name to North Macedonia, ending a decades-long rift with neighboring Greece, whose northern province bears the same name. In exchange, Athens would drop its objections to the country joining NATO. Prime Minister Zaev will seek to secure the two-thirds majority in parliament necessary for the name change next week. If he fails, he said the only alternative would be to call for early elections.
Yes, Macedonia is still fighting with its southern neighbour over what to call itself. The referendum was a success, but only saw 34% turnout. Thousands boycotted the event, and Russia has once again been accused of creating fake social media accounts to sway opinion and flare up social tensions. Russia saw the result and threatened to take the nation to the UN, to which the Macedonian government swiftly rebuked Moscow of unwelcome meddling in Macedonia's self-determination. If the referendum goes through, it should be a swift process to EU integration. If not, it will be back to the negotiating table for Greece and Macedonia. Moving on then to Albania and Prime Minister Edi Rama on their prospects.
2025 is a horizon where all of us can be ready if we will work hard and we'll do our job. For Europe, costs nothing, no 1 cent. They'll pay for it. For us, it's a matter of life and death, in the sense that opening negotiations, it means that we are finally in the future and we are finally out of the past.
That past he is talking about was Albania's communist era under one of the most brutal authoritarians of the 20th century. Stalinist Enver Hoxha died in 1985, but the wounds of concentration camps, forced labour, constant surveillance and extrajudicial killings and disappearances at the hands of the Sigurimi secret police are still very sore. Corruption is rife, and though communism ended in 1992, the political establishment hasn't changed much. What's more, organised crime is rife, whilst journalistic freedom and infrastructure developments are at an all-time low. Albania may no longer be the totalitarian communist state it once was, but the transition to a fully open society is still in progress. However, though difficult, as Rama says, 2025 is not an impossible goal, and if it does happen, Albania will become the first Muslim-majority member of the EU. Moving further up the coast to Montenegro, a country that has only existed as a sovereign nation for 12 years. 6 months ago, Milo Djukanovic won his sixth election to office in a landslide and said this at his victory speech in the capital Podgorica.
This election result is above all confirmation of Montenegro's strong determination to continue on the European road, to continue on the road that leads to a European quality of life for all our citizens, to continue on the road that will bring us to a full European Union membership.
After Croatia saw visa restrictions ease and tourists flocked to the beaches around Dubrovnik, Montenegro looked over the border, saw the benefits of EU membership, and decided they wanted a slice of Croatia's action. Montenegro is one of Europe's poorest nations and has some of the continent's worst infrastructure. Djukanovic is hoping EU investment and entry into the Schengen Agreement will stimulate the flailing agricultural nation. The country is so enthusiastic about joining the EU, they've even adopted the euro as their official currency, independent of the European Central Bank. However, Djukanovic runs a flawed democracy. Voters are given the choice between his pro-independence and pro-EU vision, or a party that advocates reintegration with Serbia and ties with Russia. Montenegrins then seem to tolerate Djukanovic as the least worst option. Yet, conditions for EU membership will mean that tolerance will have to subside. Djukanovic has been accused of organised crime links, mysterious acquisition of wealth, intimidating journalists, and violent responses to public demonstrations. The Djukanovic vision of EU membership will come at a cost to him of more open civil liberties and the purging of corruption from the government. Whether or not he makes that move remains to be seen. And now we come to the most contentious contenders. Serbia has refused to recognise an independent Kosovo state, even after a 78-day NATO bombing campaign in 1999 forced an end to Serb war crimes committed in the former Serbian province against the majority Kosovar Albanian population. Even after Kosovo declared independence in 2008, Serbia has refused to recognise the nation, and this has been a major roadblock to both Serbia and Kosovo joining. What's more, Serbia is hesitant to follow Europe and cut its close ties with Moscow. In the context of the South Slavic nations, Serbia has tended to look more to Russia's sphere of influence than towards Western Europe, a relationship that goes back to Tsarist Russia. Russia backs Serbia's claim to Kosovo, and the nations trade heavily in commodities. However, Belgrade knows the opportunity for easier trade relations with Central and Western Europe can't be denied while Russia suffers Western sanctions. So the nation is stuck in a bind, and the normalisation of relationships with Kosovo will be the first step to opening up to the EU. However, strong ethno-nationalist feelings against Croat and Kosovar Albanians are on the rise. And it seems like 2025 may be asking a lot of a nation still grappling with regional diplomacy in a way most other former Yugoslav republics are not. However, the biggest question mark for EU accession is Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Bosnia and Herzegovina has one of the most complex government systems in the world, a legacy of the Dayton Agreement that ended the war. The country is split into two entities. 51% is known as the Federation, which is made up of mostly Bosniaks and Croats, and 49% is Republika Srpska, made up of mostly Orthodox Serbs. The country has a three-pronged presidency and an international peacekeeping body, the Office of the High Representative. Government positions are allocated by ethnicity, so if you aren't Bosniak, Serb or Croat, you cannot run for office. Critics say Bosnia and Herzegovina isn't ready to apply for EU membership. In 2014, violent protests broke out across the country over poor living standards, unemployment, and ineffective government. And the political situation is delicate, with the leader of Republika Srpska seeking a referendum on independence.
Bosnia and Herzegovina is one of the most ethnically diverse countries on earth relative to its size. Catholic Croats, Orthodox Serbs and Bosniak Muslims live intertwined and scattered on the land with no clearly defined boundaries. However, this became a source of conflict, and the 90s Yugoslav wars meant Bosnia witnessed some of the worst crimes against humanity of the 20th century. Bosniak Muslims were slaughtered en masse, with the events at Srebrenica being counted as genocide by the UN. Men and boys of military age were specifically targeted, shot, and buried in mass graves. 2.7 million Croats and Bosniaks suffered ethnic cleansing, and many were interred in concentration camps where they suffered torture, rape, and sexual assault before being buried in mass graves by Serb soldiers. The Dayton Agreement and the prosecution of war criminals by UN courts brought an end to the violence, but the wounds are definitely still there. Mines litter the land, abandoned houses are still often rigged with explosives, and the famous Sarajevo roses on the pavements of the city mark where mortar craters have been filled in by red cement. Moreover, denial is rampant among Serbs and Croats for their role in the crimes against humanity, and this denial is starting to fuel ethno-nationalist feeling, not only in Serbia and Croatia, but also in Republika Srpska too. EU entry would rely on Croatia and Serbia intervening in a diplomatic fashion and rediscovering the compromises that were possible after the bloodshed ended. However, that's been difficult. Croatia and Bosnia are still embroiled in a battle over sea boundaries, and Serbia flatly denies the actions of Yugoslav troops in Croatia and Bosnia. The country needs to do a lot of work to get to the EU, but it could be possible. Croatia has expressed a vested interest in Bosnia's inclusion, considering especially that Croatia is split in two halves by the small Bosnian sea border at Neum, and open borders would be of great benefit to them. But the goal of 2025 all hangs in the balance of ethnic relations and whether or not the rise of far-right ethno-nationalism can be contained. To summarise, all these countries have one thing in common. These are countries that for centuries traded either across the Mediterranean or the Central Europe. Even today, workers travel across to Italy, Germany, France to learn a new language, gain an education and bring it back to their homeland to build it up economically even further. In short, these countries have been forced to forge their identity through war, killing and endless bloodshed, now that peace appears to be the new normal for now. After years of fighting for their respective identities, the majority of these countries are asking the EU if they can share what they have to offer with the rest of the continent. And it seems like, albeit tentatively, the answer has been positive.
The French, for instance, love the cock.
You're tuned into The Wire.
Yeah, so that is kind of what's happening. 2025 is the big date where it will be decided who gets into the European Union and who doesn't. And if it does happen for countries like Montenegro and Albania, much like what happened with when Croatia joined the EU, you'll find a lot more people you meet going on holiday there from New Zealand. And that's a good marker because that means that those countries, particularly the ones on the coast, will see a lot more trade with Italy. They'll see a lot more trade with Germany, and getting more kind of people from wealthier countries coming in to invest in your country and you know, invest in your businesses, buy your products, etc., etc., helps a lot of those countries a lot, especially when they've had years of kind of closed off borders. And
How much kind of dialogue will have to take place? Because I mean, like, 7 years is enough time that like a lot can change. So what kind of, I mean, 2025 is the big decision, but what do you think will happen, like, dialogue wise in between that time?
I think Macedonia, I mean, like I said, in that Macedonia, it depends on the referendum. Albania, I think, is very... Albania and Montenegro, honestly, I think are the most likely to get in on 2025 based on what's happening now. I think those two countries are probably the most set. Serbia and Bosnia, there are so many question marks, you just can't really judge. And same with Kosovo as well. But I mean, a lot of these countries, like, you know, in terms of what the people feel, I would have loved to put a clip in about, you know, vox pops and stuff, if I could find one in English, or translated into English. But the people generally there, like, those countries are the same size as New Zealand. They're agricultural based. You know, like New Zealand from here, a lot of people go off to Australia, they get a job, they come back or go overseas, etc. A lot of those people from Montenegro and Serbia and Croatia do the same thing, except they go to Germany. So I think a lot of young people are generally like, to have the opportunity to go over across Europe and get an education and make a bit of money and then come back to my homeland and build something up here to, you know, strengthen my nation is like... is kind of where they're at. So they kind of see it as working with the other nations and putting their voice as Montenegrins or Albanians or whatever out into the European sphere to kind of work with others to build themselves up as smaller developing nations.
Hopefully they kind of get the influence that they deserve as young people.
Absolutely. And after all the hardship and bloodshed and fight for their identity, I think they're now, like I said, they're kind of like, in terms of getting tourism in, which is a big deal for those countries, they're like, hey, Western Europe, we've got this amazing culture here too, and this shared history with you guys. Can we share it with you?
And,
which is exactly what Croatia said 5 years ago. And now in Croatia, you've got people going and sitting on beaches and having an amazing time, and Croatians are raking it in, to be honest. So,
thanks, Connor. Text us on 53995 if you have any thoughts or connections to that story.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.